just don't generally disappoint. If I disappoint, it's going to be a big one. It's not going to be just a
it's
general
severe.
Disappointment.
It's, no, like, you're right. It's extreme.
It's a severe disappointment. The information shared in this podcast is intended for entertainment purposes only. It should not be considered as professional legal advice or a substitute for seeking professional legal advice. I'm Michelle Locke, and this is Love, Lust, Law. You've heard me on my own show, Love, Lust, Law. And now today, Jake and I wanted to get real. Real with all the things that have been going on kind of behind the scenes since the launch of Love, Lust, Law. In addition to probably an update on what's been going on in my life and how that's affected me. I've made a transition from being a full-time lawyer, full-time mom, to now podcasting in addition. And this has been something that has been completely out of my wheelhouse and out of my comfort zone to do, but it's been something that has been absolutely amazing.
So you are well known within the Austin social circles as someone who is a professional, right? Someone who likes the finer things in life.
Jake, sparkles are a girl's best friend. I remember Madonna's video, Material Girl, from the 80s. One of my favorite videos, that pink dress that she wore coming down the stairs, all the sparkles she had on. And so I remember loving that video. And I also remember my grandmother, my grandma Claire, who was a little crazy, but loved her. She loved sparkly too, and high heels and flash. Then my other grandmother, who passed away when I was very, very young, had a ton of costume jewelry that I ended up inheriting a bunch of. So I've always liked bling. Now, fortunately, I also like some really nice high-end bling, courtesy of David Yurman. And David Yurman, back in October for Domestic Violence Month, did a give back campaign in conjunction with me so we could give back to the UT School of Law Domestic Violence Clinic. And David Yurman said, we'll host this event, we'll put it on for you, and we'll give you 10% of the proceeds to the charity of your choice. And I picked the University of Texas School of Law Domestic Violence Clinic because they've served such a dual purpose in the legal field for, in addition to training young attorneys how to properly handle cases involving domestic violence, but they also help serve a subsect of the population that cannot afford legal services. And those are women that are usually victims of domestic violence. In addition, they provide parole services for parole hearings for, I think it's generally women that have been convicted of crimes related to their domestic violence abusers. And so they help them on their parole side when it comes to their parole hearings. So the clinic serves a multitude of purposes in our community, and it's been around for over 30 years. And this was the first time anyone ever did a fundraiser for them. And you were nice enough to come out to Texas for it. We got to hang out, and we'll get into the story of how epically you ruined my surprise for you. But you came out and came to the event, and you got to meet some of my people. You got to meet some of my law partners, some of our associates, and you got to meet Gabby in person. And it was really just an amazing, amazing event that really I was fortunate to be a part of, and fortunate that we were able to raise enough to give UT, you know, a good chunk of money to help with their program. And I'm hopeful that we'll be able to do it again next year, because this was our second annual event with David Yurman. And so hoping next year there'll be a third. And I'm hoping we go back to the UT Domestic Violence Clinic, because I just think it is such an amazing program that is so relatively unknown in our community, which is a shame. So hopefully I can change that and amplify it.
It was a remarkable event. And who knew that you were so respected within the community? I mean, you keep telling me this every time we talk, and I've never had any practical example of it, but people actually respect you. People actually appreciate you. Not something that came up on my radar. I mean, it's something that you're very grandiose with pitching me, with sort of peppering me with how, you know, just beholden you all.
Yeah, I mention it all the time.
In the community. You walk into restaurants, red carpets, ready to roll. But I did see that. I did see that with my own eyes, that literally the community does roll out the red carpet for you. You are well-loved. You're someone who is appreciated and someone who generally likes to give back, generally likes to treat people really, really well. I mean, who knew?
Yeah, shocking, right? It was a shocking revelation, but I think you may need to get your eyes checked, because there were no red carpets. And in fact, if there was, I probably would have avoided it at all possible costs.
So, Michelle, let's talk about this airport surprise, because we're going to get into a lot of travel here. Apparently, there's been some mishaps, some misconstrued, some major airlines that may be dealing with some trouble down the road based on the treatment of one Michelle Locke.
But don't even get me started on travel.
Well, I would like to let's start with something good. Let's start with the airport pickup, which is the only way that someone should be picked up at the airport, the way you and your crew, Manning, B, and Gabby came in. And I think that's a very funny and fascinating story because it did not go the way you expected it to go.
No, it took, as in most things in my life, a complete unexpected left turn. And we have that unexpected left turn on film because, I mean, the fact that we even caught that on film. But let's talk about what happened. So you're coming in town. You and I have been friends and collaborated together now for almost 2 years. And you and I have never had the chance to meet in person. We did previously arrange. I had a trip out to L.A., but then it was about the time of the fires. And so you and I both decided really a bad time for me to come down. So didn't do that. And then I had another trip scheduled, and I think I ended up in trial or it was something work-related where I just could not make it down. And so just kept getting put off. And finally I said, okay, that's it. You're coming to town for this event. And so you came down and I said, okay, how can we really embarrass him? Right. And so I remember from prom, cause I never went to prom. I just saw everyone else that went to prom, have like these signs, you know, so-and-so, will you take me out? Or so-and-so, will you marry me? Or so-and-so, will you be my boyfriend, girlfriend? So we get to the airport and I have this sign that says Jake Deptula dot, 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 dot. And then it will you, it says podcast with me. So I was all excited to get you coming down the stairs at the Austin International Airport, Austin Bergstrom, holding up the sign as you were coming down the escalator. And we had discussed it like Say Anything style.
It didn't happen.
But you did not. You came in your standard issue black cap, black hoodie,
black jeans,
black pants,
black shoes, black heart,
black jeans. Right. He really wanted to blend in Austin wearing nothing but black and a hoodie, by the way, when it was like 90 degrees outside. So he blended well. And so it's Gabby, myself, B, and Manning. Like, we have the entourage to meet the one and only, the great Jake Deptula. Like, we are there to say, welcome to Texas. And so we're like looking. Of course, we're late because I'm always late unless it's to court. Then I'm on time. But we were late. So I think your plane already landed. You already come down the stairs. We were in the luggage area, like scouring for where you were. Like, I knew where your luggage was at, had come out, and we couldn't find you. And then about 30 seconds later, you pop up behind me. And so I couldn't even hold up the sign. So mad. Well, but the best part is I walked right by you.
All of you walk past me. This is the whole thing, is like, you were all so determined. It was you, it was Manning, it was B, and it was Gabby. And Gabby basically was the caboose of the situation, had her phone pointed at everything. So she was determined. She had actual job. You had the sign. I can't speak for B or Manning. I don't know what they were up to, but everybody was focused forward. Everybody was looking forward. Now, the thing is, my baggage came out first. That's never happened to me in the history of my travels. Probably will never happen again.
Well, when you fly first class.
Courtesy of Lockstar Media, yes. Thank you for these accommodations. The accommodations were nothing but stellar. But I will say this, is that I was like giving all of you a chance just to recognize me. And I was like, I couldn't believe Gabby actually got it on video as I was passing. You saw how close I was.
It's a classic video. Oh, no. I feel like
you can
Captain
find it
Stupid.
On Instagram, Attorney Michelle Locke.
You can find it. There's a big arrow where you see Jake walk right past all of us.
Exactly.
I can't blame Manning. He's a 10-year-old boy. No. So, you know, they're epically not smart at that age.
You're going to get all the 10-year-old right boy us. Listeners attacking you in the comments. So
I know, and that's fine.
It's half of your
a
audience
joke about
there,
so. Like, it is half my Manning Renee is half my audience. So my dog trainer follows all my social media stuff because Cosmo's on everything. And he saw the clip where it said, I proposed to you, because it was like, there's a part of the reel is you down on one knee proposing to me. And my trainer saw that part of the clip before he watched all of it. He got like incensed angry. He's like, what is she doing? Why is she proposing to someone? Do we need to go down, lock her down? Like, so, and Gabby
he
talked about that.
He actually thought you were proposing to somebody at the airport. at the baggage claim.
He did. He was like, He's like, no, this is not happening on my watch. He was like, we're going to have to do an intervention. I mean, he was, so the reel got him because he's like, who's she proposing to? And where's my, we need to have, I mean, he got angry. Like he thought I was actually proposing to someone.
I got to tell you, that's not out of character for you. You have told me considerably over and over and over. You've told me about this story in high school where you had to basically force a gentleman to take you to prom. So if you want to bookend this, that wouldn't be out of
character. I didn't force. I strongly suggested down a flight of stairs.
You strong-armed the gentleman, okay? And is he one who reached out to you later?
No, I gently guided him in the right direction, which was down the bleachers.
Where is he guided now? Have you followed up with your prom date?
He's still with us. He's still with the
living. He's still with us. That's great.
He has a very successful.
Yet he's still with us. Good. That's good to know.
He's not departed. Okay, he has good. A very successful dairy farm outside of Albuquerque, New Mexico. He's doing great. Got great kids, great wife. I mean, he's just a heck of a guy. That being said, he barely survived, you know, prom with me, but he came out okay. A few bumps and bruises, okay. But nothing won't be.
Okay, that's what I find so fascinating about that story is it really does speak volumes. I think you have been consistently surrounded by weak men in your life that you have to, let's say, put some pressure on, whether it be emotional, mental, financial, or physical.
You make me sound like a brute.
You're not a brute, but I think you're someone who's a powerful figure. And as you know, our partnership is kind of built on, let's say, delayed or indecisive behavior. You're somebody who jumps to decisions.
Not by me. Well, it was time for me to conquer another state. So why not start with LA? No. So ironically enough, you and I had gone almost 2 years without meeting each other and then saw each other twice within like a 10-day period. So you were in Austin until Saturday, October, I think, 4th. I flew out to Denver, I think the same day you left to go back to LA. And I spent a few days in Colorado and then flew out to LA to run into you again. So the plan was to go see you and see LA and see how the other half lives.
You know what? You know what? I've eaten out with you at restaurants now and we've gone out. So I can tell you is that in Austin, you don't.
But do not things. Dating people because that confusion no, was dating. Made no, no, no. In LA.
Gabby said, don't share that. But you, go ahead well, and share it. And then
I'm
Gabby
not
going to
share the specifics of it. I'm not going to share the specifics of what was actually said. I'm just saying that there was another podcaster that joined us at dinner and was under the mistaken belief that we were more than just podcasting partners. Would that be an accurate statement?
Yes, but I don't know where the assumption came from. I guess it would be like two heterosexual people at dinner in the same industry. Oh, are you two? That seemed to be the question that came up. So we will cut that, Gabby, I promise. But just for now,
we will cut that.
Talk about it. But I think that was it. I just think it's fascinating.
Why is it a heterosexual people?
No, but you know what, though? You could assume that on the other side, too. I mean, everybody's just assuming that. But I have a motto, don't shit where you eat. We've talked about that before in terms of these kind of things. So I wasn't really taken aback because I've had that question come up with Jamie and I before. People just assumed we're a couple for whatever reason. And Michelle, you know this. Jamie and I could not be more opposite in every stretch of imagination. Similarity is we're both white, we're both human, and we're both from the Midwest. That's it.
That's it. Well, I had 3 male roommates in college. Didn't sleep with any of them. It was truly, I just got along better with men for so many different reasons. When I was younger, it was always between women or young ladies or young women. It was always a competition, right? It was never anything other than, you know, look at me or I'm better than you. And there's always some ego involved. And when I had my male roommates, when I was at UT, it just went well. There were no issues. There was no pettiness. The only fight we ever had was I got tired of cleaning my side of the bathroom because boys have different bathroom habits. And I don't like dirty. And so I clean because our bathroom, we had a bathroom on one side of the apartment and a bathroom on the other side. So I shared with the male counterpart on my side. Y'all need to work on aiming is all I'm going to say.
Did living with three men prepare you to have sons and raise sons?
You know, that's actually a really good question. I have to say, honestly, I was probably made to be a boy mom. I mean, I really was. Absolutely. I've always gotten along better with boys. And... always.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
hardcore boy mom.
And I think one thing is very interesting, getting back to the whole dating scenarios and things like that, is that that's a weird segue. But the reason I'm mentioning this is that it's like going from your sons to dating. Let's talk about that. No, but the reason I'm mentioning this is that you're someone who's like has male friends, and then you're surprised when someone gives you some sort of attention or affection or finds you attractive or things like that. And that's come up significantly before. You're like, are they flirting with me? I know this person slid into my DMs. They sent me gym selfies. I don't know though. This might be a professional engagement. This might be some sort of networking situation. I don't know. So you have a real uncertainty.
Listen, flirting. I do not understand it. Let's start with that. Number one. But number two, I've been one of the guys forever. Like I've just been one of the guys. Like, and so it is a foreign concept for me to have any of them hit on me because I've always been just one of the guys. Like I was the one that all my male friends came to for dating advice or I never forget one at UT. He ran track for UT and he was in a couple of my finance classes and he came to me crying one day because his girlfriend had found out he had cheated on him. He had cheated on her. And I was like, and he was coming to me crying. I'm like, well, what do you expect me to tell you? Don't cheat. Did you not expect to get caught? But they would come to me for like advice on what to do. It was never like, I'm going to come to you, Michelle, for advice because I'm interested in you. No, they knew I'd give them an honest answer from a woman's perspective and I didn't want anything to do with them. So it is definitely a different position for me to be in when I've got a man hanging out with me that wants more than just to hang.
That's a fair assessment. But I think also, too, is that the fact that you were sort of this pseudo-therapist for friends in relationships, did they ever come back to you later since you are a divorce attorney and say, hey, I need help here? Has that ever happened with people in your past?
Yes, that has happened a fair amount. And sometimes I'll just reach out through DM saying, hey, I have this question. And for the most part, I really do help. To the extent that I can, I will. But it is it doesn't happen every day, but it is not uncommon from someone from my past to reach out and say, hey, I've got a question. Can you help? Which is also a weird place to be in because some of these people you haven't heard from in 20 years. Some of these people, you never even talked to you in high school because you weren't part of the cool crowd, but they have no problem reaching out now to say, hey, which I also think is interesting. But again, it goes kind of back to my motto of kindness costs you nothing. It doesn't cost me anything to help these people or give advice. And so I help out where I can. I don't generally disappoint. If I disappoint, it's going to be a big one. It's not going to be just a general severe disappointment.
It's no, like, you're right. It's extreme.
It's a severe disappointment. Yeah. I don't do mediums very well.
You know what? When you're traveling, what do you expect from an airline?
I expect from an airline to be treated the same way that I try to treat my clients, which is with respect. And if there's a problem, how do we get to the bottom of the problem? How do we fix the problem? And I have found that some airlines are more adept and customer service oriented as to solving problems. And I'm going to start with my trip because, as we all know, Cosmo goes with me about everywhere. And there's really good reason for that. But what people see is, oh, he's a giant dog. And so that comes with some of its own issues just because he's so big. And I understand that. And because of that, I try not to make any kind of stink about stuff because I know there's an extra accommodation because he is so large. I also know that flying with animals has oftentimes been misused by people who label their animals as service animals when they are not. I have real issue with that. I've invested in an inordinate amount of money in training for my dog. I have, in addition to an inordinate amount of training, he goes for retraining quite often just to ensure that his skills stay sharp and he does what he's supposed to do. And I also take extraordinary care of that animal. For anyone to think that traveling with your animal is all fun and games, has never really traveled with a service animal, because it is an immense amount of work. It is not just you that you're taking care of. It is, in some ways, it's a lot more difficult than taking care of a baby in a lot of ways. But you have to ensure their level of comfort, their level of accommodation, and they have needs. And not all places are equipped to deal with those particular needs. But Cosmo is a phenomenal traveler. He really is. So when we left Austin, we went to Denver first to go visit my parents, stayed 4 or 5 days in Denver, and then from Denver went out to LA. And so because of it, we flew Southwest from Austin to Denver and then Denver to LA. And Southwest is nothing but accommodating when it came to travel with Cosmo. But also keep in mind, I have my Department of Transportation form that I'm required to have. I have all the documentation that's necessary for Cosmo to travel as my service animal. And so when you have all the proper paperwork, and some airlines get into a service animal number, we'll get into that in a minute. And they also have Cosmo listed on, you know, who travels with her. Never have an issue with Southwest. They are nothing but accommodating. And in fact, we'll get into how accommodating they are when I come back from LA, because they really just did above and beyond their call of duty. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate Southwest Airlines for what they did compared to another airline that did not. Anyway, so we travel and Southwest just makes it easy. Because he is so large, they usually board us first so we get the bulkhead so he can lay down. But on the way back from LA on Southwest, we had to fly through Vegas. And on the Vegas leg, our flight out of LA was delayed. And so they had to actually hold the plane in Las Vegas to get back to Austin, because there were several people coming off the plane from LA to get to Austin. And they knew that I had a service dog. And apparently a couple of the flight attendants were complaining about a big service dog, and they didn't save us the normal bulkhead. Okay. Cosmo and I adjust, not a problem. So they saved the next to the last row on the airplane, like at the very, very back. So we had three of us, because it was Manning, myself, and Cosmo. And Cosmo, for those of you who don't know, is a 165-pound mix between a Dane and a Mastiff. Part of that is to get rid of the short life expectancies of Danes, because Mastiffs typically live longer. That being said, he's a large animal. And pictures don't do him justice. And I think Jake can probably attest to that, because there is not a picture of him out there that adequately shows you how big that animal is.
You don't know big dogs until you've met Cosmo. Cosmo is not a dog per se. In my opinion, Cosmo is another species, which is some form of a bear meets wolf meets dog meets teddy bear.
Meets teddy bear. I mean, because he really is, once he gets to know you, is wonderful. At first, it's like, holy cow. We get to the back of the row. And so we get on the airplane as fast as we can. And I literally, like the other people are running to the gate, I physically cannot run. Like, I have a limitation on my physical abilities that I am not allowed to run or jump unless it's necessary to save my life. That is literally the instructions from my doctors. So Cosmo and I walked as quickly as we could to the next gate. And we walk all the way down the airplane and go to the next to last row. And God bless Cosmo, with as big as he is, got on the floorboards underneath, like as much underneath the seat as he could, and was completely in there and out of the way for anyone that's walking up and down the aisle. Like, he did what a true service animal does, is they make themselves as small as possible and out of the way. We go to any restaurant, and Jake, you witnessed this. You witnessed the David Yurman event. He goes under a table, under a small space, so where he can stay out of the way. He did it when we were in LA, did the exact same thing in LA, because that's what he was trained to do.
He's so out of the way that when he's under the table and people have come in since we've been seated and don't know that he's there, when he pops out, there is a collective, gasp.
There is. Restaurant.
Where did this dog come from? How is this dog now looking eye level at me? And are we going to get out of here alive? Those are the three things that go through people's heads.
No, really. The comment every time is, has he been there the whole time? I'm like, yes, yes, he has.
No, it's like a magic trick in a way.
No, it is. It really is. And we were in some tight quarters in LA. But I will say this, the one advantage, and this happened when I took him to New York, when we were on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, I didn't get bothered by any of the costume people for pictures because like the seas kind of parted for Cosmo. Like oh, he became the attraction on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
No performers, no scam artists, no Scientologists, nothing.
None. Not a single person came to approach us for anything. It was wonderful. Now, coming back, I've had issues with American Airlines twice in my life. Twice. And they were experiences that were bad enough that I was not my normal friendly self because I really understand it is not their fault for the most part. I understand they're trying to do their job. I really go above and beyond to extend courtesies to people because you never know what someone's going through. That's just what I believe. So I book through Alaskan, right? And so Alaskan then booked on American. So that's how that whole trip back went through the initial booking. And so Cosmo and I have traveled on American before. And in fact, it was about a year ago because that's how we went to New York. So Cosmo has an animal service number with American Airlines. We've already been through the rigmarole with them. And so I didn't think it'd be an issue. I thought, well, maybe there'll be a problem, but we'll figure it out because I've got all the paperwork. I've got all the documentation that he has an animal number. And so I get to American and Gabby and B are traveling with us. And so they get through no problem. I go to the check-in counter at American because when you have a service animal, you have to go to this to get help from the ticket agents. And the ticket agent was less than helpful. And she said, well, do you have your service animal number? And I said, he's already on my profile. If you pull him up, you can see he's there. Well, did you get this done 24 hours in advance? And I said, no, because I booked through Alaskan and I didn't realize I needed to do that because we'd already flown on American and had a travel number. And no one from Alaskan said, hey, by the way, you need to, if you're traveling with a service animal, fix it that way. Okay, fine. So I didn't have whatever was needed. Okay, fine. I guess that's a screw up on my end. I'll totally own it. If it's my fault, it's my fault. That really wasn't my complaint. My complaint was their complete lack of any attempt to rectify the situation or to assist. And I don't like to say I'm disabled because I like to pretend that I'm Superwoman. But I have had 3 cervical fusions in my neck, in addition to, as we know, my knees replaced, which actually got me back on my feet, but my ankle replaced. But because of some of the surgeries I've had, I've got some pretty, my body wears out. I get tired quicker. Travel wears me out. I try to pretend that I'm okay. And a lot of times I'm not, you just tough it through. And so I told Lee, like, look, I said, he is a service animal. He's flown with you all before. You know, we flew on Southwest. Here's my Department of Transportation form filled out, completed that you all need. Here's all of this information. She's like, and she just kept repeating the line. Well, did you get it 24 hours in advance? And I think I finally told her, I said, no, I didn't. I said, I've already told you this. And she's like, well, we just can't help you. And that was it. Not a, well, let's see if we can rebook you another flight. Let's see if we can get a hold of the service animal department. Let's see what we can do, because I think most people will agree there's almost always a solution to every problem. There are never absolutes in life. The only absolutes in life are death, taxes, and whether you're pregnant or not, because you're never kind of pregnant. In life, there are just very few true absolutes. Most things you can fix. Most things there's a workaround. That's just how life is. And they weren't willing to do anything. And so she's like, well, you can call the American Airlines and see what you can get done. But basically she's like, good luck, because your flight's in an hour and a half. So I sat back with my 10-year-old and he and I are traveling by ourselves, because I told Gabby and B, I said, you all go ahead. I'll figure out how to get home. Because if anyone that knows me, because I have a trip out getting home from Canada one year, I will get home and I will find a way. And so I went back and sat and called American Airlines and was on the phone with them oh, for about 40 minutes, 45 minutes, and then said, okay, well, we'll transfer you. And they even confirmed, we can confirm, we see him on your profile. I mean, they confirmed all the things that I knew were true. And then they transfer me to, oh, we'll transfer you to this department. And guess who got disconnected? I didn't disconnect. They disconnected on their end. And so then I had to start the whole process over again of calling American Airlines. And at this point, it's getting too close to what's going to be the boarding time. And I've got a 10-year-old little boy who is scared that we're not going to get home. And so I said, screw it. Let me see where I can get, how I can get us home. And because Southwest has been so amazing, every time I've traveled with Cosmo, I said, let's see how, if Southwest out of LAX can get us home. And they did. And I think the American Airlines flight left LA to go to Austin direct at 2:30. The Southwest went through Las Vegas, then Vegas to Austin. And so I got in line. I had to walk from Terminal 1 to Terminal 5 or vice versa. I forget which, but I had to go from one terminal to the one of the last ones at LAX. And Manning and I and Cosmo walked, because I'm not familiar enough with the trams or anything else. I couldn't figure it out. And I just knew I had to keep moving because I had a little boy that I had to keep distracted. And so he was really upset. And I just said, sweetheart, don't worry, we'll get home. And so I had to keep reassuring him. And then we got in line at Southwest. And at that point I was exhausted. I hurt. I was tired. And I walked up to the lady at the gate, the ticket agent at Southwest. And I said, here's what's going on. Can you help me? And that woman was so nice and so accommodating. And Miss Locke, not a problem. We can help you get on that flight. She gets a tight connection. She's like, but we think you can make it. And I'm like, I said, I got to get home. And she got me home. And it was quite the adventure. But my frustration with American was they simply just didn't offer a solution. And if that is how they treat someone who is disabled, now understand, people are going to look at me and go, yeah, you're not disabled. And that's the mistake that most people make with most disabled people, is you assume someone is not because of how they appear on the outside. American made that mistake. And I really, I remember being in a wheelchair for about 3 months post one of my surgeries, because I couldn't walk on my ankle for 12 weeks. Anyways, and I remember being in a wheelchair. And I remember, and I've talked about this before, just how much, if you are disabled, that the accommodations are never enough. The door handles that you push to open the door so you can go into the bathrooms for handicapped people. No one realizes that where those are usually put aren't even effective places to put them, so you could actually push to that and then effectively wheel into a bathroom. It is the accommodations for people with disabilities, I think, as a general rule, do not truly accommodate those that are disabled. And I didn't discover that until I was wheelchair bound for 3 months. And I was fortunate enough that I was able to get out of a wheelchair. A lot of people are not. And the accommodations just aren't where they need to be. And going back to kindness, do you know how difficult it would have been one of those agents to say, you know, Miss Locke, whatever reason we didn't follow, let's see what we can get done. If we can do anything, would have been much more appreciated. And then if they said, well, Miss Locke, there's just nothing we can do, at least that would have been an attempt. There was not even an attempt. It was shut down. And so then, after I'd been on hold with American for about 45 minutes and I got disconnected, I went back up to the American Airlines ticket agent counter to go talk to them again. And I was cranky. And the woman that had helped me before didn't have anyone in front of her. And she refused to take me up to her window, or not window, station, whatever they call it. But she refused to even look at me. And so the person, the ticket agent next to her, waved me in. And I said, hey, here's what's going on. I called blah, blah, blah. And she's like, well, did you call 24 hours in advance? And I said, I'm going to tell you the same thing I told that lady. I didn't. Here's why. Here's what happened. And again, she said, we can't help you. And I said, well, I'd like that employee's name and employee number, please, so I can file a complaint. I said, because I am disabled and you are not helping me at all. And she's like, and she actually said, she's like, you can ask her for it. Okay. So I walked over to her and I said, hi, you just helped me about 40 minutes ago. I said, I'd like your name and your employee number, please. Well, for what? And I said, you don't remember helping me just a little bit ago? Remember when you denied my service dog and I and my son anything, any kind of assistance? You don't remember that? And then she backed off a little bit and said, so again, I'm asking. And understand, I wasn't yelling at her. I was not speaking in a raised voice. I said, I'm asking for your name and your employee number. And she said, we don't give employee numbers. I said, okay, can I have your name? She gave me her first name only. And so that was my end of the discussion. I just said, listen, I said, I know the ADA. I said, I'm disabled. You're not providing any accommodations. This is a problem. I said, but y'all have a good day. And I left. And then I walked to the next terminal. And then I, fortunately enough, had Southwest and their amazing team at LAX get me on a plane and got me home. And all I cared about was getting my dog home and my son home, and not in that order. But I had to make sure my 10-year-old was terrified we weren't going to get home. And that was not an option for me as a mom. You know, and what's interesting to me is they legally can ask me two questions. They didn't even do that. And that's what baffles me, is they're legally allowed to ask me two questions as it relates to my service animal. And they couldn't even ask me those questions. Like, they made zero attempt to ascertain anything other than, you didn't follow the policy, so we're not even going to talk to you. Again, if that's what, I understand that. I do. And please understand, I'm not saying that I should get some exceptions because I didn't follow the policy. That was my screw up. But at least help me figure out how to fix it, right? Because again, almost everything is fixable. But they wouldn't even do that. And that's where I feel bad for someone that is more disabled than I am. Listen, I'm able to walk. I can live life for the most part, really normally, for the most part. There are other people that can't. And is there answer to those people with service animals, you didn't follow the policy, so you're shit out of luck? That's a really bad public policy to have. I did recently go to LA also to meet Lenora in person. And Lenora Claire, who is amazing and helping me out for so many different reasons. But Lenora connected me with Troy Jensen. And Troy is this fabulous photographer. And Lenora said, let's do kind of a rebrand. And I said, sure, why not? Because as Troy put it, some of my pictures from before were really good, but he said they didn't really capture me. And he's probably not wrong. And since some of the other pictures were much more serious lawyer-like pictures, they were a little less, they didn't capture all of me, because there is very much a large side part of me that you don't see outside of the law side, that I have a fun side, that I have a sex appeal, Hollywood glam appeal, vibe appeal. Okay, so I was a little more sterile, right? It was much more like, you're a lawyer, you're fierce. So my pictures, I think, right, were probably correct, more corporate. And I needed to show more of my other side, which is the fun side, the glamour side, the bling side that you don't really get to show in a courtroom. And really my other skill set, which is not leopard print adjacent side. Yeah, I do love me some leopard print. I really do. If I could wear it, like, I've got a pair of leopard print pants. Gabby's seen them. You've seen them. But it took all I had the other day not to wear them to court with like a black suit jacket. Cause it wasn't like a big hearing. It was a small, like, I knew it would be in and out hearing, but I so wanted to wear the leopard pants, but I didn't. So I just kept it to like leopard print shoes, which was my, you know, my spark of fashion in the courtroom. Troy brought out the glamour side, and boy, did he. Holy moly. Or as my grandfather, God rest his soul, would say, holy Moses, in his heavy French accent. And then the amount, the sheer amount of what was usable out of that photo shoot, I don't think happens very often. I was, it made me look beautiful. I was like, holy cow. So I didn't expect it. And if I'm having an oh shit moment, I can't imagine what other people are saying, because I didn't expect it. I expect, okay, I'll look good. I didn't expect, holy shit, I look good. And so now that the joke from Troy is, he's like, well, these pictures will help you find your next husband. I'm like, God, but I got to say, so worth every bit of it. So what do I expect out of it? I don't know. I can tell you this, though. It gave me a confidence back in myself that had long disappeared. He made me feel beautiful again. He made me want to be more adventuresome in some of my clothing choices and style choices. It got me out of the funk related to, you know, post-divorce. Like, how do I go back out in this dating world? He gave me some life back, and I'm forever grateful for it. So whatever comes of it, awesome. But at the end of the day, he gave me back something that I didn't think could happen from just a photo shoot. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Love, Lust, Raw. It's been completely unfiltered, despite Jake's best attempts. There's been no script, and it's just me running my mouth, which apparently sometimes I'm not that bad at. It just depends on the day. I'll be back with new episodes. Love, Lust, Raw is hosted by me, Michelle Locke, Jake Deptula, the executive producer. Normally, we have great sound mixing by Jared Landis, because he's our sound editor and mixer for Love, Lust, Law. And normally, we have great scripts and research because of Haley Gray, who is our writer and researcher for Love, Lust, Law. But unfortunately, or fortunately for them, I wing this one and don't hold any of those ones accountable for what we've produced on Love, Lust, Raw, other than Jake. But it was really a chance for me to be me. Take it or leave it. Love me or hate me. I hope you learn. I hope you laughed. And I hope you enjoyed. Want to reach out? Want to find out more about what's going on in my life? You can follow me at Instagram at Attorney Michelle Locke. You can also email me at hello@michellelocke.com. Just remember, courtesy of Margot with no T, Michelle is spelled with one L.